Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 16, episode 3 of Der Daily Zeitgeist.
Yeah.
For January 31st, 2018, my name is Jack O'Brien, aka Jack in the U.S., Jack in the U.S., Jack in the USSR, Brian. That's courtesy of the Beatles. That is courtesy of Niall Watson at Rye Red Shithead on Twitter. And I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
It's Miles Gray now, don't dream it's over.
Hit the high note.
I mean, I'm out here. I was a former castrati and I sang in the choir. And that goes out to Jose Antonio Reyes on Twitter. Again, that's back-to-back AKAs for you, my man. If you hit me with three in a row, that'll be good.
Nice.
There's no award.
Way
no
to get that incentive.
Hey, I don't want to lock myself in. You know,
I didn't know the castrati procedure was reversible.
It was.
Yeah, that's great.
My mother lied to me for many years. Okay. It turned out I was not a castrati.
Okay, good. Well, we are thrilled to be joined for the third time, I believe, on this show by the hilarious host of Yo, Is This Racist, Andrew T.
What up?
What's up, man?
I'll take the award for the three. The hat trick, is that what it's
called?
Yeah,
hat trick. There you go.
Like a hat trick.
The triple crown. The
three crowns.
Hitting for the cycle would be the fourth one. Andrew, what is something from your search history that is revealing about who you are as a human?
Most recently, video game playthroughs. Still on that tip. So there's that, if that wants to generally be revealing. But the thing before that was the phrase, hamster eating a burrito.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That video.
Yeah. So I must have been trying to see that. Mm-hmm. I feel like this is where I'm like, this is how the news cycle works for old Andrew T. It goes like, see a bunch of people making jokes about something on Twitter, mm-hmm. not getting it, trying to distill one noun, one verb, and I guess an object from time to time, and putting that into Google to just figure out what the fuck is happening.
So did you end up seeing the video?
Yeah, I assume I did.
It was the lobster eating burrito.
Yeah.
I think it's like Tiny Denizen. That was a pretty big video for a little bit.
Yeah. That's how my brain works, though. So that's, in case I ever sound ill-informed, it's because that is my primary information source.
Just Twitter.
Yeah,
just
Twitter.
Twitter memes.
Guessing.
For people who are driving and haven't already looked it up, tiny hamster eating. The burritos are small. I was picturing giant burritos.
No,
burritos
are
tiny, mm-hmm. which makes it a lot of fun.
I assume Japanese?
No, they're LA-based. I think the production company that did it.
What?
I think they're called like Tiny Denizens or something. I don't know.
Hello Denizens.
Hello Denizens. Yes, that's what it was. I remember back. Wait, I have a question. You said you were watching video game like playthrough videos?
Oh, well, you know what? If we want to do this, that actually is my underrated.
Okay.
Here we go. What is
I guess you're the
Andrew?
Host now, Andrew.
Sorry, guys.
What is something that is underrated?
I'm so into esports as like the way I watch regular sports, which is I don't participate. Like, I don't play fucking football.
Right.
Or like whatever. But like, that's my new thing. Is like, because for a long time I was like, I don't play video games. I don't get it. And now I'm just all in.
Wait,
I just
really?
Watch people play video games.
What games?
There's this
Witch new games. I'm
there's
sorry.
A new one. I think it's called The Hunt, which mm-hmm. is sort of like H.P. Lovecraft meets a first-person battle royale shooter game. Mm-hmm. So you're like in teams of two hunting monsters, but other people are also hunting monsters, and you can all kill each other.
Boom!
It is just like gripping. I'll call it television.
Yeah.
And are you watching the ones like PewDiePie where you have the person talking throughout?
Like a Let's
like
Play?
Yeah.
So okay. It's entertaining. Most of the people I like are British or Canadian. I guess famously the most like pleasant people are probably the McElroy brothers, the famous podcasting fam. Mm. Those guys play a lot of stuff. And it's like, you know, unlike PewDiePie, so much less likely to hear the N-word.
Right.
You know, so that's cool. That part is good.
One of the few places you can watch video games be played and not hear the N-word.
Yeah. It's mostly... Yeah. Look, yeah. I was just like... I had to cross a Rubicon because I was like, now there's a third way to be into video games. Like, I know I can't play video games because I have, like, the type of personality that... I just remember, like... It being 7 in the morning on a school night.
Right.
And just being like, one more Zelda dungeon. And I was like, this is insane. Like,
no,
I can't do that.
That's how we get down.
I know, but I got shit to do.
Wait, so you would be up until 7?
No, I'd be like...
Or you'd be up early to
no,
play.
No, 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 up until 7.
Wow,
just
that's
really
dope.
Going hard. So I'm like, I can't have video games in my life if I want to do anything. Although I guess if you're going to dovetail some kind of broadcast entertainment and video games, maybe I'm just doing market research.
Yeah.
For the thing I want to do.
Right.
I stayed up real late playing Civilization, Sid Meier's Civilization.
Yeah.
It's a game I used to stay up disgustingly late, like with my old roommate. Like,
yeah.
I got him hooked, and it looked like a weird video game crack den where it'd be like 4 a.m. I'm like, how far are you?
I just know I can't do that, and I know I will do that if I get to playing.
Yeah.
But when I'm watching, it's just like a sports. It's like a sport.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder if that is going to be, like, there's going to be a whole new generation of people who've, like, never played video games. They're just like, oh, I'm just a fan. I just, like, watch.
Right,
them.
Right.
Yeah.
God, that would be really sad, because that's, like, some little brother shit. You know, like, when you're playing as a kid, and like, can I play? You're like, fuck out of here, Jason.
I think that's what I like. The other thing that the other walkthrough that I like is Resident Evil 7.
Oh.
Have you ever seen that?
Is that the newest one?
I think it is. Two things that are very funny about it. It's super scary and gross and disgusting, but they made a VR version.
Yeah.
So watching people genuinely be freaked out by the VR version is very funny. And then it's just a, like, you know, as good as any other horror movie.
Yeah.
It, you know, I don't know. Wherever you are on horror movies, it's as good as, you know, the average.
Yeah, Resident Evil 2 fucked me up mentally. I could not play that at night.
What's something you think is overrated?
Overrated is... listening to both sides.
fuck the other side.
Fuck all that. Specifically, for a project I probably, not that I can't talk about it, but I'm not ready to talk about it. It's just a personal thing. I've been reading Atlas Shrugged. And good jeezy. It's been a while since I've hate read something that's 1,000 pages.
Right. That's an investment.
It really is like the most painful thing I've ever done. It is like just hateful. And the thing is that the specific thing I'm getting towards is evidently somewhere in the third, we'll call it act, the third book of Atlas Shrugged. There is like a 60 some odd page monologue about objectivism. I already got past like the 5 or 10 page monologue about the gold standard.
Jesus.
That was
Christ.
Incredible. But yeah, I was like, I went into this project thinking, well, I should do this. This is just intellectual honesty. And let me just say right now, intellectual honesty is for fucking suckers.
Mm-hmm. Let them know.
Do it.
So that's pro gold standard.
Way over. Oh yeah, yeah, of course. Well,
pro gold standard.
Now I'm of course onto Bitcoin, but
right. Mm-hmm.
I did actually buy like $100 worth of Bitcoin because I wanted to play poker online with it. So I went double gambling.
There you go.
That's layers to that.
It was really, if you want the poorest investment you could possibly make.
Yeah.
That's it.
But Ayn Rand is pro-gold standard. That was, like, her philosophy.
I think so. I'm basically reading the book cold and then going to go do some research afterwards.
Right. No second screen experience for you as of yet with Atlas Shrugged. <Right.
laughs> Oh, my God. The second scroll experience.
Yeah,
for
there you go.
Second scroll.
I mean, just say, I haven't finished Atlas Shrugged, but Ayn Rand, not going to learn how to pronounce it. She lived through World War II, and multiple times in Atlas Shrugged, she refers to not taking enough profit when you could as, quote-unquote, the most evil thing that could be done.
Wow.
So
wow.
Even, like, that's an ignorant thing to write in 2018.
Right, right.
A woman that straight up saw Hitler come and go
right,
and be like, great. Well, you know, the worst thing is.
His profit incredible. Motive
Don't
was
go whole
on
hog.
Point. Though.
You gotta go yeah. whole hog.
All right, we're trying to take a sample of what people are thinking and talking about right now, today, at this moment. And we like to start out by asking our guest, what is a myth? What's something people believe to be true that isn't true? Andrew.
Let me see. Here's a myth that some people believe, although it is being cracked, is that Kung Fu is not real at all.
People believe Kung Fu is real?
Is like a legitimate thing, sort
yeah,
of.
You can't step into the octagon with that shit.
You 100% can't. I had a really sad conversation with my friend's 5-year-old kid, who is really into
Jesus.
Ninjago and Bruce Lee.
Uh-huh.
And I was...
He just shit on his dreams?
Well, I think I diverted it. I think I might have talked him into a child's jujitsu class.
Like a fucking jits mob, jits bro over here?
Yes.
It's all about the jits mob, homie.
I mean...
So you're saying that kung fu, like, as we see it in movies, is just bullshit. It's just something that was made up for...
Well,
like,
so
kinda...
beyond that, it is like a thing where it's like... It is... As it is sort of taught in 2018, it is by far the least effective way to learn how to punch and kick someone.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, just go box.
Right.
Which, you know, or which people don't know, Andrew is boxes.
I'm okay.
Okay. Look, I've heard about you. I heard you got hands out here. I've heard from other people who said you go hard, sometimes harder than they expect.
I used to be really good. I used to be able to, like, I've only one time in my life experienced this, like the actual getting in the flow matrix style thing when I was boxing, where I was like, oh, I am literally two steps ahead of this person at every, and it felt like being Neo.
Wow.
For nice. Like 30 seconds. This was a person who was very new, and I'm not bragging. I'm not ever, never.
This is when you
there.
Went to that child's boxing.
Right. Yeah. I beat
this
up.
This was that 5-year-old.
I beat up
yeah.
this kid. You know, this kid.
Weak ass chin.
No
man.
Moves.
Wasn't ready for that hook.
No moves.
But yeah, I've heard that like a lot of the stuff that Bruce Lee made cool in movies is just like the jump kick is one of the most ineffective things that you can possibly do in a fight. Like jumping straight at someone and trying to kick them because you're just like taking your like all leverage out of the equation.
Yeah, and you're opening yourself up to be on the ground.
Yeah, right. And you're committing all of your weight in one direction by definition. It's not... None of those things are necessarily wrong, but learning them in a kung fu karate school context is like just the least efficient way to learn that stuff.
Yeah.
And the whole like belt color thing is
not
the most official thing. Right?
That's also like that's the true American snowflakes. Like that, that's like a thing that is essentially marketing that American schools do to kind of keep you going.
It's
yeah, you want to get to black.
Yeah,
what are you, purple?
And you gamify it, and you like keep adding little things, and it's, they're essentially look. I don't want to like. There's all kinds of ways, but it is like I just really had to like talk this kid down from his dream of going.
He was
to,
like, "I'm going to Jeet Kune Do school."
Yeah, right? And it's all that stuff is fine, and it's good for your health, and blah blah blah. And it was also true, like kid's five, like. And the other thing that I did that was very, I turned into like. The worst Uncle Andrew type person because I actually he was like show me wrestling so I actually showed
put him in an armbar and shit.
Well, I showed him a move.
Shh, go to sleep.
Called
to sleep.
An Americana from Side Control. You can yes. And I don't know why I taught a 5-year-old how to do this. I mostly assumed he would not remember how to do it until his sister, who I think is 3, wandered into the room.
Oh, shit.
And he showed her how to do it. And I was like, oh, not only does he remember, he processed it enough to do it. And I was like, okay, this is exactly what, like, a crappy, like, adult with no kids does to his friend's kids.
Rolling up on his real sister, like, hey, you want to roll?
Yeah. Right. It was really, like, I was like, just please... Please.
Some more practical stuff like a standing triangle. You know what I mean? Stuff he can do on his friends at school.
I mean, yo, this kid is like, 5-year-olds are, for their size and weight, crazy athletic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
aren't there like
sure.
studies about how like if you could have a baby's fitness, like it's unattainable
baby
as a human?
Baby strength is the strongest like per pound. And,
yeah.
Like, yeah, based on the size that we ever are,
right.
basically.
Yeah. Because a baby needs to, you know, we're babies are evolved to like, hang on to a tree until someone gets them.
All right. Stay here, baby.
Just tree this.
Gotta go.
Yeah. That's
I gotta go buy some scratchers in the bodega. You stay here.
Hang on to this parking meter. Yeah. All right. Let's get into it. Miles, Puerto Rico has been fixed.
Yeah, it has because apparently, I guess FEMA, they're like, yo, flawless victory. We were the fuck out of here. But that was what we heard yesterday, that FEMA was pulling out of Puerto Rico, despite many people not having potable water or electricity, or the fact that many students have left because, you know, you need computers to learn, and you can't be learning in Burger King all the time, like the few places that have Wi-Fi or electricity. Anyway, so that came out yesterday. Apparently today, FEMA was saying like, nah, we're not leaving, because the original rumor was that there were FEMA officials who were saying like, oh, well, a good amount of supermarkets have opened back up. And, you know, if we keep giving the food and the water away, then no one will buy the food and the water in the supermarkets.
That's right. That's my baby Ann talking.
And that'll affect the economy. And then today they walked it back and they said, well, no, we're not pulling out. That was a decision that was being weighed of whether or not to, like, you know, take a look at what stores were open and figure out if they were going to leave. But they are saying that they are winding down food and water distribution, which even if they're not leaving, to wind down the assistance, I think is a fucking awful decision. And also when you couple that with the fact that the largest, like the national power company is being privatized to save some money. Got disaster capitalism at work, baby.
We talked about this when it happened, but this is kind of the neocon playbook, is you let a huge disaster happen and then you go in and privatize everything. They did it after Katrina. And yeah, I mean, really the cruelest thing that they could do to these people is, you know, continue to give them assistance, because then they won't learn to fight for themselves, right?
Right.
Isn't that what they're not the Randian philosophy? Right.
Because they're not Americans, you know what I mean? They're also American passports, but right. Let's not act like they're American. It's a disgrace.
Right.
I mean, this is like, it is a little troubling that they feel so confident to trot out an argument like grocery store economics.
Yeah. Right.
Because it's like, that means they're so confident in their like laissez-faire capitalist like worldview that they're like, well, people will get on board. Like, it's like weird. Like, you can believe this sort of thing, or that can be a consideration. It is bizarre that that makes it to the top of the PR pile.
Right.
For like why you would do this.
Well, I think because these sound bites are probably just strictly for American people who might be like, well, I guess if the stores are open, then things are going
to be normal. Grocery stores evoke like abundance, you know?
Yeah.
And especially when you're an American and you're thinking of American grocery stores, you're like, oh, so they have like a Safeway open that's just like full of all the brands and stuff.
Meanwhile, but not to even mention like the dire straits that people are in financially. So I don't know, you know, that's really the sexiest argument as to why you can leave. It's like, well, the store is open. It's like, yeah, but a lot of people are still struggling financially. Like, dealing with the lack of work in the aftermath of just draining your savings and things like that.
Yeah.
So it's a very, you know.
Well, that's all their belongings were destroyed. All their homes were destroyed.
Yeah, you know, and people were dying of, you know, not because of the lack of electricity or potable water. You know, let's limit that body count too.
Right.
But that's also like the other part of the neocon playbook is like, you know, disasters drive GDP.
Right.
You have to spend money to fix stuff. And so it is really like, you know, what are you going to do? Like, is this good or bad? Like, more money is flowing because people have to, like, repair stuff. But
right.
Like, ugh.
And we're not even really sending money there yet. So, you know.
Right.
We got to.
So they're going to do everybody a favor and hang out there for a little bit longer.
For a little bit longer.
Because they didn't like the PR wave that got made
there.
That
is really nice of them, though.
Yeah, that is cool. FEMA almost always gets it right, I think, is what we can say. And then there's also this article that came out in The Atlantic that we all read, and it's dark, man. It is
fucking
dark. It's about Paul Manafort, and it's called American Hustler, which is definitely a complimentary, like a way of making his struggle sound cool. But it opens with him like crying and threatening to kill himself to his daughters, and his daughters being like, oh, brother, this shit again.
He's being a real tightwad with the cash.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, he's going to make me serve hot dogs at my wedding kickoff party.
Right.
It does feel like when the inevitable biopic comes out of this, the role of the daughters is going to be a plum one.
Yeah, right?
That's going to be the one, the Oscar bait.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, he was a tortured dude. I mean, like, this article is wild because it shows you it's like Wolf of Wall Street almost,
right,
but for lobbying.
80s, yeah.
Yeah. And
he
like
created lobbying, as we know.
As we know,
like the super corrupt
power
ass
broker.
Right.
Yeah.
He brought everything like under the same roof, right? That was his innovation.
Yeah.
And like, how did that change? It used to be sort of just lame people offering to like, you know, help a politician get a job, but they were saying that, you know, the lobbying industry just in general was struggling to squeak by before Manafort. And then he came in the late 70s and early 80s. And just now it's like they're the hot shit in DC. Yeah.
Yeah. With Roger Stone, of course, at his side, which is the other crazy thing, too, is as
Nixon
much as
Backtad himself.
Yeah. As much as you read this article and you hear Manafort, you also see Roger Stone come up a bunch. And you're like, God damn.
Yeah.
This
it's
is
just
wild.
The same fucking dudes. Just stay in the picture.
I mean, but I guess the one thing is, look, it's a long read. The Atlantic, however, did convert it into like an audiobook. So you can listen to it. We'll put that in the footnotes because honestly, when you listen to this, it's very hard to think that anything that happened with Paul Manafort and the Russians and the Trump campaign was anything but egregious fuckery on his part. There's so he can't feign ignorance here.
So when he starts getting involved in the Trump campaign, his friends and advisors are like, dude, you cannot do this because he's in a lot of financial trouble, right? He owes dictators tons of money. He is just, you know,
he
really
stole
fucked.
Money from a fucking oligarch. Like,
right. A Russian
savage,
oligarch.
Savage, dude. He's like, savage shit.
He's like the friend in Rounders or like some other action movie where they're like, oh man, I'm good for it. And like the guy has to come in and save their ass. Like that's Paul Manafort at the beginning of this. And then Trump's like, yeah, you can run my campaign.
Right. Well, because the whole thing, he was so broke. He knew the only way he was going to kind of start getting his money back is if he could work with Trump, and best case scenario, Trump becomes president, mm-hmm. and that helps elevate his star because everything went wrong once Yanukovych was ousted in Ukraine.
Or
that
even
was his
just
main cash cow.
Like placing. Like I just feel like the profile, you just go all in on the right wing machine, right? And you just assume like being next to Trump is good enough to like at least get me out of this.
Right.
Fuck.
Well, he's like, but he was the kind of dude who would just be like, who was it? Marcos in the Philippines, like gave him a briefcase, like $100 million or $10 million. And he was like, hey, can you give this to Reagan?
Right.
And he's like, yeah, I'll give it to Reagan. And just straight up walked off with the cash.
Yeah.
And didn't give him shit. So like his whole thing was just being like, yo, I can get you here. And that was like his money making scheme. And so now that was his whole idea with Trump is like, okay, I owe this Russian oligarch like $20 million that I stole from him. And that was his whole thing was like,
he didn't tell Trump that.
No.
This is his internal monologue as he's like, yeah, you know, I'm doing great and I can like get you in the right doors. And, you know, he's a wheeler dealer. He had a big name. We talked before about how when they were talking about his money laundering, they said that he like laundered money through, I think it was like $300,000 worth of suits or something. And that's like not that far fetched because that's like, that was his thing was like getting fancy suits.
Yeah. Money laundering, it really is an art.
Yeah.
Like it really, I do not have the creativity to come up with enough ways to move my, although my Bitcoin poker scheme is not.
Right.
That.
There you go.
Right. I mean, I think it's a long article. It has everything from like crazy arms deals that go south to, him trying to like launder reputations for dictators and murderers fucking, it's wild. Just look at the whole thing. And when you get to the point of when he meets Trump, he's like, look, he's broke as fuck, but he realizes Trump is also cheap. So if he goes like, hey, I'll work for free, Trump is going to be like, oh, this dude's rich. He doesn't need money. I'm going to bring him on Team Trump.
Yeah.
And that's how he gets in. And the way he even gets there, he calls Tom Barrack and he's like, I need to get to Donald Trump. And that's how he got there. So it gives you another dimension where you thought Paul Manafort was just like some doofy dude and you're like, oh, homie was straight evil.
Well, it's also just like double grifters or triple grifters. Like,
right. Grifters grifting other grifters. Yeah.
It's like,
grifter's gonna grift.
Are you on a, they're on a pyramid scheme of who is, like, they're just passing around the same briefcase full of money at this point.
Right.
They have to be.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a dream team of sort of incompetent crookedness.
I mean, they all had to go in. Every single person in the Trump administration went in with the plan of let's shoot the moon.
Right.
Like, let's do everything. Everyone is going to fail so hard that we're going to win.
Right.
And they did it, which is, again, as a gambler, admirable as hell.
Right.
Yeah. I love
it. Impressed.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. And we're back. And super producer Nick Stumpf was just saying it's funny to think about the campaign from the Russian perspective because, like, they already have Carter Page and, like, all these, you know, people that they have Mike Flynn, you know, real in deep with the Trump campaign. And then Trump's like, and guess who our campaign manager is?
Yeah.
Paul fucking Manafort.
The man who made Viktor Yanukovych.
Right.
Do you think there are like two different teams at the FSB just playing like fantasy chaos league against each other?
Right.
And they're just like, I don't know, all my chips in. Cause it's gotta be fun for them at this point.
He must have blew up that grid though and like, and enter new player Manafort. They're like, oh shit.
Yeah.
What?
Manafort.
That means, someone had a 1,001 bet on that came in with Manafort.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, so dope.
All right. So we do want
to, FSB.
We do want to talk about, the State of the Union was last night. Did you guys watch it?
Oh, yeah.
I watch it on the equivalent of Vine.
Right. Yeah. Whatever. Me too.
Whatever. So that's
Twitter. Like minute-long clips.
Like, yeah, or less. Stills, some people, you know, some now this montages.
Right.
Yeah.
The closest we got to getting a consequential policy statement was actually after the speech when Trump was walking out. So Sarah Sanders had said yesterday that Trump wasn't planning on releasing the memo, but then a Republican politician was like, hey, you going to release that memo? And he was like, oh, 100%, 100%. So that was the only, because I think they specifically said, like, they were not going to be introducing any new policy in this State of the Union. It was all about just sort of riffing on the existing stuff. Yeah, otherwise, I don't know. I personally find, and this isn't just a Trump thing, State of the Union time, like, watch it while watching the State of the Union passes slower than, like, any time I've experienced since I was, like, in church hungover as a kid. Like,
damn, as a kid?
Or, well, you know.
Yeah, I was picturing 9-year-old hungover Jack.
The answer to that question is a hard yes.
Exactly. Jack was hungover at his confirmation.
Right. So it was the third longest State of the Union ever.
Oh, he's not going to like that.
Daniel Van Kirk. Yeah. yesterday we were talking about the over-under. He thought it was going to be the under an hour, which is where the Vegas line put it. I gave a hard over, and it ended up being the third longest ever, an hour and a half, which is, I mean, I have the advantage of having talked about this before on the Daily Zeitgeist and knowing that dictators give long speeches. Stalin and Castro were, like, notorious for giving, like, 3 to 4 hour State of the Union, or the equivalent of State of the Union speeches. And those are the people Trump wants to be. So, of course, he's going to go long.
Yeah. He also, like, his teleprompter voice is, like, so slow.
Yeah. Well, there's two versions, right? There's Trump, who's putting in effort to read and sound like he's a good reader in class.
Yep.
Like,
yep,
he's good at pretending like those are him. That's just him talking.
Yep.
And then what I like to call Trump jazz is when he goes off the sheet music and starts improvising. Mm-hmm. And that's when the shit gets good. Mm-hmm. That's when the most wild shit comes out. And that's when you know, because you'll see him, even like at rallies, he'll transition. You know when he's doing jazz because he's looking around and he's just saying real controversial shit. And then you can tell they're probably like giving him like, go back to the fucking prompter. And then he'll like start talking again and just being very, you know, presidential, quote unquote. But it was, I mean, the whole thing was fucking weird to me just because he was taking shots at many people. And then it started off with like, look at all the things that like the last president did to put the economy where it is now that I inherited. And then
that was not literally what he said.
Yeah.
Right?
But essentially, I mean, that's kind of what it was. It's like, oh, I did this and this and this. And like, yeah, you're benefiting from a pattern that began years ago. Then we got into like, I was like, when is it going to get dark? And then it did when he started talking about immigration.
Yeah.
And brought out his fucking like freak show of exploiting victims of violence or whatever. Like whether it was using the grieving families of those two women that were killed by MS-13 gang members and using them to be like, it was so disgusting to watch these families clearly just in so much pain because their children had been killed. And for him to just be like, and that's what MS-13 does. And that's why we got to stop all this illegal immigration.
Right.
Like, it was like a DARE class in that you point to the most extreme examples to try and scare kids off
the smell
shit.
Weed? You smell this
yeah,
stuff?
You smell
that's
this.
The worst smell you'll ever smell, kid.
It'll make
you're
crazy.
Fucking go crazy. There was a guy I saw who jumped off his school building because he was high on this grass.
Right. Yeah. That ends in like a heroin alley.
Right.
Exactly. And that was like the equivalent of all these fear-mongering like tactics. It was wild. The other thing too, even with the one interesting thing was sort of like, that he was starting to pivot with North Korea, talking about like, oh, like, you know, they have nuclear weapons that we have to stop them. Like they're an aggressor nation that has to be in it. And now like using the like human rights context of being like, you know, having that amputee, having him there to sort of paint like how like this regime and like the human rights atrocities that are happening there. And even with like Iran trying to like sort of frame that as like, look at the people standing up. We stand with you. Was kind of eerie because I'm like, what are you trying to set up right now? Like that, that we have like the moral authority now to go like enter some kind of armed conflict with these kind
of people? Well, and the pitch ultimately is like, you know, these people suffer so much and there's nothing that dropping a nuclear bomb on them wouldn't help.
Right.
Like, I'm just like, what are you pitching? What are you going to do to these people?
Yeah. That's the other. That's why it was so. It's only just thought to that first moment. There's not much thought past that.
Right. Yeah. And I guess the idea is that because the human rights abuses are ongoing things, then it justifies sort of intervention rather than just, you know, responding.
We will be greeted as liberators.
Yeah. That always works, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like the thing that kept popping up in my mind yesterday was sampling errors, which is, you know, where you look at one small sample and assume it's true of everything and everyone, because that's, you know, that's basically how advertising works. That's how our, like, entire culture works. But they really leaned heavy on that. I think it's a State of the Union thing to, like, have maybe a hero or two in the audience. But his was, like, a show and tell of, like, suffering and heroics. And
It was like a menagerie of exploitable oddities.
Right. And, you know, the MS-13 thing, like, big cities have seen a surge in, this is from a New York Times op-ed where they were, like, pointing out how wrong that specific sort of illustration was. They said big cities have seen both a surge in the foreign-born population and a dramatic, indeed almost unbelievable, decline in violent crime. Like,
yeah.
No.
So they're seeing a surge in immigration and a decline in violent crime, which doesn't, like, numbers don't fit within this narrative, but you know.
But you need that. Immigrants are people who, because he also said they take your jobs, was also the other thing. Is like, well, these low wage workers then brought in the killer immigrant argument. It's just.
Well, it's also like going back to the sampling size thing. I think the other way, I think you guys have talked about this, is like the idea that people respond to anecdotes more than data.
Exactly.
Yeah. By so much. So it's like, and you can't fight anecdotes with data. And in this case, you can't really fight anecdotes with other anecdotes.
Right.
Like, it's a pretty effective.
Well, I mean, unless you're like, well, look at this, like, dreamer, you know, if it's this immigrant came and killed these people, then I guess the counterpoint is like some of the dreamers that were in Houston who, like, selflessly went and rescued people and putting themselves in harm's way to help other Americans. Like, that's a great example of, you know, but I guess it doesn't hold up if you're just trying to. I see what you're talking about, like, but it's just fucking weird. Yeah.
Like, it almost feels like the kind of thing that would resonate with Trump voters would be like dreamers who vote Republican and murder MS-13 members. Like, that's the only thing that will work.
Right.
Right. But it was weird. Like, every time, like, even when he was like, and look at this black man who has a job. Like, there was like a dude from Ohio who, like, worked for the other guy's company. And Trump was just like using it. Yeah. Felt weird. And I felt like a lot of those people who were used like as his examples of the good or the bad or whatever, they looked really conflicted when they had to stand almost. Like that they kind of knew that they were being like exploited.
Yeah. Do you think they got told that they were going to have to stand?
I don't know. There were some people who just looked. I mean, I'm sure they knew.
Right. Yeah.
But like, I'm sure they didn't know that, like, I'm going to use you as an example to paint all immigrants as violent murderers. Like, I don't know if it went that far versus, like, you know, the president would really love to acknowledge your pain.
Right.
And then cut to him telling all this MS-13 shit and then being like, all right, now stand up.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just, it felt odd at times. The other funny thing is, like, with all the human rights talk, the way they cheered for Gitmo, like the when he brought up Guantanamo Bay, you thought fucking Tom Brady just walked in with a Super Bowl ring. They were like, yeah, like, what the fuck are you cheering Gitmo for? Like that. There was so much shit like that it blew my mind.
That is the kind of odious shit that happens every State of the Union, right?
Right.
Like, but I don't know about cheering, like, this felt like overly aggressive for, like, I don't know if what they knew they were cheering for, like, because it just felt like the structure of the State of the Union was like, I'm going to make a big point, but, like, pause for applause. Point, pause for applause. And when he's talking about, like, basically saying, like, and we got to figure out how we question them.
Yeah,
like,
it's like, of course. I just feel like if you're a member of Congress or guest, like, you're just on a team.
Right.
Right.
And there's almost nothing that they could say on your team's side that you wouldn't cheer for.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. I guess at a point when you're like, oh shit, I'm cheering.
Yeah. What
for
are you
going to
do? Stop.
Bay?
Right. Like, just kind of like slow clap out of it.
Yeah. The focus on the reactions of Democrats, like, that actually seems to be a big part of the conservative media response, is like Drudge's headline, like, his main headline is Trump shows heart, 75% approve of speech. But like all the headlines about the speech otherwise are, you know, Black Dems stone-faced reaction to news of low black unemployment, which suggests that Trump had just revealed to them for the first time that black unemployment was low, and then Pelosi frowns at call for working together. So they're trying to portray, and Fox News is doing the same thing, trying to portray Democrats and liberals as being unreasonable and not willing to work with Trump.
I mean, big misstep on Pelosi's part inviting MS-13 members as a guest. I thought that was
on all sides.
That was
right.
And I thought her teardrop tattoo was a little overdone.
Right.
You know, she didn't have to have MS-13 tattooed on her throat like that.
It's a bad look.
Yeah. She did kill those people, though. Yeah, so, I mean, she worked hard.
She worked
for it.
She earned that spider web on her elbow. She did her stretch. She did her stretch at Pelican Bay.
And just because this would be what Drudge and the right-wing media would be focusing on if it were on the other foot, the ratings were down compared to Obama's first State of the Union. So, like, way down if you compare the two. So.
Yeah. Well, it was funny because I knew so many people who were actively, like, aggressively trying to avoid it.
Yeah.
And clearly, like, I wanted to, but we can't because we got to keep our finger on the pulse.
Right.
So I had to grin and get through it, but it was
– that pulse is pretty erratic these days.
Yeah, it's wild. I think there's heart palpitations for sure. We may have AFib.
Right.
But yeah, it was a wild ride, and I just don't like – you know, the fucking – the chain migration thing, like they need to stop with this chain migration shit.
Like, are you guys at with that rhetoric? I feel like
it's weaponized.
The battle.
It should not be called chain migration. They need to stop doing that.
Family reunification.
It is a very important thing. Like my grandmother was able to come here when my grandfather died in Japan because she was fucking she was alone, so we brought her over here. We were able to because it's about unifying the family rather than like leaving my grandma in Japan. And the idea that like this is like unlimited family members get in, like it's not a promo at fucking Olive Garden where you're like hey, unlimited lobster and family members get in free with chain migration. It's about, you know, people when they migrate here, you don't want to have them isolated because that's when they become vulnerable to extremism and shit like that. And if you have them there and you can maintain some kind of semblance of a family unit, that's good for everyone.
Right.
And I think to like begin weaponizing this shit and basically turning this whole conversation to let's just end fucking legal migration in general is wild.
Yeah. I mean, that's the crazy thing is just they seamlessly went from illegal immigration, which they've been saying for years, you know, that's our main thing. They're not following the
come in the right
rules
way.
Of law.
Come in the right way.
And then suddenly just seamlessly shift to, and we want to limit legal migration. We want to like cut it by a third, essentially.
What was also crazy was like even talking about the lottery, that was so overly grossly mischaracterized on how that process works. It was just like lie after lie. Which is wild because the visa isn't just like, oh, you reach your fucking hand in the bucket and then this person comes. Like, these people already, even to get in the program, you got to have a high school diploma and, like, work in a specific industry. Like, they're already vetted. And then once you get picked, they will do a background check. They'll interview you. And if they think you're a security risk, you even go through even more vetting.
Yeah.
So it was just like a lot of, just fucking lies. But, you know, we're not surprised.
But it's also just like, I think I talked about this one of the early times, it is the Gish Gallop. It's just like, you tell so many lies, like even what you're doing now, right? It's like point by point refutation. It is just like, it's exponential because it takes 10 sentences to refute a one sentence lie, or even two sentences, right? That's still exponential.
Yeah.
And then you're fucked because you sound like a person that's taking too long to explain something that Dr. Direct
like,
was able to say.
Okay, egghead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, plus there was that one guy who came over on the lottery who attacked people in New York, even though he was radicalized.
Hey, but the exception is the rule.
Yeah.
I'm actually reading this book on the second coming of the KKK. The KKK like started in the aftermath of the Civil War, but then had a huge resurgence in the 1920s, which was a just crazy racist and anti-Semitic period in American history. Like it was when people were kind of on board with all the dictatorships and authoritarian movements going on in Europe. And there was something called the business plot where people like Henry Ford and like really powerful business people tried to overthrow the government that just people don't talk about because it's kind of a scary story about how corporations can become so powerful and corrupt. But so this book about the second coming of the KKK, one of their main successes during that decade and it lasted for 40 years was immigration. Like, I hadn't realized that, like, so many of the talking points from them in the 1920s are, like, line up with what people were saying, up to and including the idea of they're asking for Nordic, like, immigrants. They're like, we need more Nordic immigrants and need to cut down on, you know, all other types. They were actually mad about Irish and Italian at the time, too.
See, there's something to agree with on, you know, you can find common ground with anyone. Yeah,
fuck the Irish. Am I right?
Potatoes, O'Brien?
Yeah, potatoes.
You said potatoes before we started recording in a way that truly was like, okay.
But yeah, I don't know. It's, you know, it's been a KKK talking point for almost 100 years. And
yeah, we're rebooting the 1920s.
Yes.
Just in time.
Gotta do the reboot.
20s is 20s.
Well, yeah, with these tax cuts, you know, even though he was like, I gave the largest tax cut ever. It's like, well, no, he didn't. But
right. But
we know who did and what that what that kicked off. The roaring 20s, baby.
How did that end? Just kept roaring, right?
Kept roaring on through to World War III.
Right.
So we're doing great. But the real highlight for me was the response at the end.
Yeah.
Can we move on to the response?
Yeah,
I'm sorry. I want to make sure. I want to make sure we're good.
You watched somebody named Joseph Kekady? Not familiar with the name.
How do you say Kennedy?
Yeah, Kennedy. Yeah.
This kid, Joe Kennedy III, the three. Right. Apparently, he's part of some sort of, you know, big family dynasty of politicians. Mm-hmm. Oh, Kennedy. That's
Kennedy,
what it is.
Kennedy, that's right.
So, I have heard of them. Familiar now, yeah.
So RFK's grandson, Young Kennedy, which is his new rapper name, which I think is a dope. That's actually
sick. Would be a good
Young Kennedy
name.
Is a
Young
dope
Kennedy.
Rapper name. And I'm going to say that on Twitter. So don't steal that. That could be my new AKA. But anyway, Young Kennedy came out and he gave the response to the State of the Union, which is normally like the wackest shit. Like, you don't want to be the person giving the response. Cause I think Bobby Jindal did it after Barack's first year in an empty ass hallway. And they're like, it was so transparent because the GOP was like, well, here's our non-white guy talking.
Yeah. Right.
Here's and our colored.
It looks like the effect of the speech was like they just told him moments before turning the camera on him that he had to do it because he was like so shook and just like caught off guard.
I think, did Marco Rubio do it one year?
He did.
With the dry ass mouth?
Yeah, he had a dry mouth.
Yeah.
And you could like hear him.
Yeah.
But it is like a thing, it's just gotta be they treat it as the minor leagues for.
Right.
Yeah. They test you out. They'll be like, let's see how people respond to you. Let's see if they're picking up what you're putting down.
Yeah. Right.
And let me tell you, Joe Kennedy fucking laid it the fuck down.
Yeah.
I was so surprised at how well this dude, like, gave his speech.
Yeah.
I mean, again, it could also be the effect of immediately following a fucking heaping trash fire that happened before in the form of the State of the Union. But I thought he was a really great speaker. He came off very sincere. The speech was very idealistic, but I liked that it was definitely like left of center left too with some of his talking points, which some like liberal pundits after were like, I wish he was a little more centrist. It's like, bro, no, we're not winning with that kind of messaging. Talk that shit. Then he's like laying out.
I wish people could see Miles's face.
Yeah.
Right now.
I'm like animated and I only had one cold brew today. Halfway through or towards the end. And he's like, to the dreamers, straight up switches it to Spanish on him.
And not in an awkward way, like the VP candidate, Tim Kaine.
Yeah,
do it, and it sounded like he was your 7th grade Spanish teacher.
Right.
Like, it was, like, very, like, I don't know.
Yeah. No swag. Well, not flavor. Yeah. I mean, because Tim Kaine speaks great, perfect Spanish.
Yeah, this dude just looked like he switches to Spanish in his day-to-day language.
Yeah, he just came through.
Sorry, and Sophie, who's sitting in for super producer Anna Hosnier, just wanted me to say a boner alert.
Boner alert. He's so beautiful.
Joe Kennedy III, boner alert. He's got red hair, which is a thing she's into ever since.
And he's got that Kennedy hair.
But yeah, he is a good looking dude.
He's a good looking dude. When he switched to Spanish though, I was impressed. Apparently he was working in the Dominican Republic, I think with the Peace Corps. So he's not just, you know, he's out there. He's putting in some work. But it was refreshing to see someone be able to give a response, without like even directly addressing the president. Like it was just about, he was really kind of laying out the kinds of values that I think like resonate with people from a more populist standpoint of like, you know, you should be able to afford to get your education. You should, you know, not go broke from needing healthcare and things like that. And he did it in a way that was very Obama-esque. Like you could tell his favorite rapper was Barack Obama because his first mixtape sounds exactly like Barack Obama, but it was more the cadence. It didn't feel like a blatant ripoff, but you knew he was looking at some tape.
Right. And the way the media is covering this is Droolgate. They're being like, ah, it looked like maybe he had some spit on his lips or something.
Fucking weird, man.
Because I think he just over chapsticked his lips.
He's probably a guy with chap lips all the time, and then he probably went a little overboard with the chapstick.
Yeah.
And his lips were a little bit smaller than the diameter of the chapstick.
Right.
So it got to the edges.
He had some shiny shit going on around.
I feel like they were just really like, just don't have dry mouth. Whatever you do, so, you know, they went the opposite direction.
Right.
Wet the shit. Yo, bring that baby oil over here.
We need a lot of viscosity.
Republicans dry, Democrats wet.
Wet?
Right.
We are going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. And we're back. And we wanted to talk about this New York Times story that just came out, I believe, yesterday. Where they did a really in-depth study into whether the Fast and the Furious movies cause people to drive faster, essentially.
That sounds like a wild bet, like that two journalists make. They're like smoking weed, like, yeah, you think people drive faster after seeing the movie? No, yeah, no. Let's go to the
receipts. They need to have a section of the paper that is just that. Just
this
like
kind of
standard
bets.
Drunk conversations, like settling
turned
them.
Into actual journalistic investigations.
I know to be true about myself, but like I definitely didn't know that you could statistically prove it. But like I definitely drive faster after seeing Fast and the Furious movies.
Right. So they did an exhaustive search or like went through many speeding tickets, right?
Right. They just looked at a single county, I believe, and just, you know, across time and did a really detailed statistical analysis of, you know, how much speeding tickets rose and what the speed people were clocked at was when they got speeding tickets. And there was a significant, like a 20% rise in the months after a Fast and the Furious movie came out. And people were more likely to get caught speeding near movie theaters also.
Awesome. And then they compared it with like Hunger Games release weekends.
Right.
No fluctuation in violations.
Hunger Games had no fluctuation. So, yeah, I don't know. This is something that I've always thought was underrated, and I think I might think that because I am more affected by popular culture than other people, but just how influenced we are by popular culture, like, that seems to be a huge...
You mean by the Daily Zeitgeist?
Yeah, by the Daily Zeitgeist. Like, yeah. I've just thought it's underrated how we change minds. And,
every day.
Are creating new worlds.
We change hearts, too.
No, but, like, growing up, I was...
One and the same.
Always... I would like find myself like talking like a movie character or something just because I don't know.
That's
would
true.
Like take it in.
When I was watching The Sopranos a lot,
right.
I had this weird New York accent for like a couple months.
Oh my God. The week I got the Mr. Show DVD set was by far my most insufferable.
Really?
There's no worse person than Andrew the week after he watched all of Mr. Show.
Yeah, and I mean, there's other examples like the whole thing with family being a big value with mafia people. That was mostly started by The Godfather, and like they incorporated that afterwards. But it was mostly prior to that, it was just like crime organizations, like any other gang.
It was just like the 40 Italians on your block,
right? Exactly.
It's fine. But not family dinners and all that.
Right. Right. Yeah, and the way they dressed was influenced by Brando in another movie. So it's, I don't know. I think that's an underrated thing. Do you feel like you've made any big life decisions based on what you're watching?
Man, I think, I don't know if it's what I'm watching. Maybe it is. I really used to only exclusively smoke blunts because of Wu-Tang Clan.
Huh.
And seeing Method Man. And Redman, and I'm like, oh, they're always, okay, smoke rolling up a backwood. I don't know. Hip-hop definitely altered a lot of my consumption habits from drugs and alcohol, 100%.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, by design, I hope. Right? That's why, that's why they make the music.
Right.
Going back to the video game thing, actually, now that we're talking about it, look, this is going to age me a little bit, but when my roommates were
playing... When ColecoVision came out.
when my roommates were playing a lot of Grand Theft Auto 3... It really desensitized me, not in the way that you would think to violence. It really desensitized me to how allowed you are to just walk into traffic. Right.
Like, you just thought you could just like cross.
I would just kind of do it and just kind of stare down cars being like, what the fuck you want? And yeah. This is in New York.
You're so like, I'll pull out a rocket launcher.
Yeah, a little more acceptable, but it made you feel like you were invincible to cars, made me feel like I was invincible to cars.
It gave me the opposite effect of where I would be driving. I'd be like, what if I just ran these people over? Like, yeah. I do in GTA.
Yeah.
And
that's the New York Times next, study that they need to do is whether in the aftermath of Grand Theft Auto game releases, if like pedestrians getting hit like rises. Ooh, I bet it does.
I don't know, but there was a study that said violent video games don't necessarily affect people's behavior.
There has
towards
been,
violence, right?
There I thought have there was been a thousand studies saying both.
Yeah.
Sides.
Oh boy.
I think the thing is, it's more subtle than that, right? It's less like, oh, you think you can just beat people up, but I do think there's like something akin to like they just, you know, you become less sensitized to how dangerous a car is.
Right. Or maybe like you could do like research into like kind of disciplinary issues in a school on like either side of a video game release.
Yeah.
Because you might walk in your class and just talk spicy to your teacher or like rough a kid up. What's up, dog? I'm high off this Vice City right now.
Right. Yeah.
I just like the idea of like, first of all, I'm just using this is poor man's copyright. I just really want to do someone to do a Purge movie that's just about tax fraud. But, you know, all crime is legal. Doesn't it have to be violent crime?
Yeah, right.
So just like tax amnesty?
Or whatever, I don't know. Right. Like
a bunch of insider trading.
If you follow your file your fraudulent taxes on Purge Day, what happens?
Right, that's like, a great idea.
I made nothing this year.
I just think there's room for a comedy in that universe. That's all.
Yeah.
But second of all, I'm like, see, it's like, or with the Hunger Games example, like, it's not like, oh, people are out shooting arrows because the Hunger Games thing is out. But like, do people have a different like relationship to authority or whatever? Like, how does that? It's the power of the media, y'all. I wish someone had studied this.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Oh, yeah, I wonder if bow hunting increases after Hunger Games.
Yeah.
Or Winter's Bone.
Well, my friend's kid is all about kung fu because of Ninjago.
Oh, right. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bringing it full circle. Yeah, and I do feel like movies, despite the fact that they're supposedly made by liberals in you know, Hollywood in urban places. They, like the Hunger Games, a writer at Cracked, David Wong, talked about how, like, the values in our movies are all, like, pro-rural people, like, people out in the sticks and, like, anti-people in cities. Like, for instance, in the Hunger Games, the capital, everyone's, like, a elaborately dressed, like, weirdo, or in Star Wars, like, you know, the empire is like the city, and then like Luke the hero is out in the rural areas. And our producer Sophie Lichterman has just shown me that yes, in fact, there was a huge rise in girls bow hunting or learning how to shoot arrows and archery back when Hunger Games happened.
Makes sense.
Yeah, and there's always a huge spike in clownfish. After like a Nemo movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. People have to, I think owls, there was like a huge owl epidemic after Harry Potter, and people are like the wildlife people were like, guys, stop.
This is a
fucking
bird
owls.
Of prey.
Yeah, this is a terrible idea. But yeah, that is always problematic after a kid's movie comes out with an adorable animal. Andrew, it's been a pleasure having you.
Thank you.
Where can people find you?
Andrew T, last name is spelled T-I, Yoz is racist. Let's just say yozisracist.com.
You
can find me on Twitter too.
Yeah. We were on Yoz is racist. You guys should check out that episode too.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, in fact, only listen to that episode.
let's run up
the numbers.
You just
on
had
that
Jamie
one.
Loftus on there.
Yeah, you
I
just
yeah,
had
yeah.
favorite Jamie
we
Loftus.
We were talking about how I hit her up immediately after she tweeted about how she was a super podcast guest.
Yeah.
Oh, how debasing that was.
Yeah, right. And I was like, you know what? It is true, but you are a great guest. So.
Yeah, it's true.
She's wild. She's great.
She's the best. Miles, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Miles of Gray.
You can find me at Jack_O'Brien. You can find us at Daily Zeitgeist on Twitter. We are at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page. Just search Daily Zeitgeist. We have a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes. We link off to the sources of the information that we talked about today. You guys, check out Culture Kings.
It Sophie, you're on there, huh?
First spin-off podcast from The Daily Zeitgeist. It has three of the funniest improvisers in Los Angeles. It just released a new episode. We're 4 weeks in. The episodes, each one's better than the last, but they're all really good. So please go check that out. And that is going to do it for us today. We will be back tomorrow because it is a daily podcast. Talk to you guys then.